In a country where smiles are practically compulsory, Barbara Ehrenreich discovered something unsettling. Despite being world champions of positive thinking, Americans rank only 23rd globally in actual happiness. This paradox hit her personally when she received a breast cancer diagnosis and found herself thrust into Cancerland, a place where medical treatment came bundled with mandatory cheerfulness. Pink teddy bears, inspirational jewelry, and an unwritten rule became immediately clear: maintain a positive attitude at all costs. Those who expressed fear or questioned treatments were subtly shunned, while survivors spoke of cancer as a gift or blessing. The underlying message was unmistakable: your attitude determines your outcome, and negativity, not cancer cells, is the real enemy. When did complaining become taboo? Modern self-help gurus don't just encourage positivity, they demand we get rid of negative people entirely. Churches promote complaint-free congregations, distributing purple bracelets as reminders not to voice concerns. Positive thinking advocates recommend avoiding newspapers and television news, creating carefully constructed bubbles of constant approval. This retreat from real-world problems reveals the helplessness at positive thinking's core, the implicit admission that some things can't be fixed through attitude adjustment alone. The most compelling promise offered is the law of attraction, the idea that positive thoughts magically attract positive outcomes. This concept exploded with Rhonda Byrne's The Secret, which sold millions despite making claims like, "Food doesn't make you fat, only thinking it does." To appear credible, these theories misappropriate concepts from quantum physics, invoking vibrations and energy fields that collapse under scientific scrutiny. What emerges is a deeply antisocial worldview that undermines the shared reality making human connection possible. America's obsession with positive thinking emerged as a rebellion against the oppressive Calvinism of early New England settlers who lived in constant anxiety, examining their loathsome abominations and finding relief only through ceaseless labor. By the early 19th century, expanding frontiers and economic opportunities allowed Americans to reimagine their spirituality. Pioneers like Phineas Quimby and Mary Baker Eddy launched the positive thinking movement, reimagining God as an all-encompassing spirit that humans were part of, making sin impossible and disease merely an error of thought. Yet positive thinking preserved Calvinism's judgmentalism and self-examination. Both traditions require internal self-monitoring, Calvinists watching for sin, positive thinkers vigilant against negative thoughts. This creates a self-alienation where one part of the self must work on another, requiring endless reprogramming rules. A vast industry now sells motivation through books, coaching, seminars, and merchandise. While individuals purchase these products, the motivation industry primarily serves corporate America, which pays five-figure speaker fees in this multi-billion-dollar business. This industry surged during the downsizing wave of the 1980s when about 30 million full-time American workers lost their jobs to corporate restructuring between 1981 and 2003. While the Christian right gained attention for its fire and brimstone approach, a friendlier theology was steadily gaining ground: positive thinking disguised as Christianity. By the early 21st century, this approach dominated America's most successful megachurches, which doubled to 1,210 between 2001 to 2006, reaching nearly 4.4 million congregants. Joel Osteen exemplifies this new positive Christianity. Despite lacking theological training, he expanded his inherited church to 40,000 weekly attendees and $1 million in weekly income. Lakewood Church, housed in Houston's former Compaq Center, resembles a suburban multiplex with no visible Christian symbols. Services feature sophisticated production, extremely loud Christian rock, alternating with short speeches, all choreographed with colored lights and video screens. These megachurches typically blend into corporate-style environments, abandoning distinctive architecture for secular buildings. Pastors function as CEOs, managing multi-million-dollar enterprises. As churches became more corporate, corporations have become more church-like, with charismatic leaders claiming almost mystical powers. Companies hired motivational speakers to manage change, a euphemism for layoffs and increased workloads. Books like Who Moved My Cheese taught downsized workers to accept change without complaint. For anxious layoff survivors, team building aimed to create company devotion despite job insecurity. Most white-collar workers accepted positive thinking as a substitute for their former security. In 1997, Martin Seligman established positive psychology as his American Psychological Association presidency theme, legitimizing the scientific study of optimism and happiness through his position and foundation funding. Respected psychologists began publishing papers connecting optimism and happiness to health and career success. Media promoted this science of happiness, while self-help entrepreneurs replaced religious appeals with studies show. However, concerns emerged about the field's scientific rigor. At the 6th International Positive Psychology Summit, Ilona Bonniewell admitted that results are presented as stronger than they are, and the science has not necessarily caught up with the promise. While studies show correlations between happiness and health, they don't establish causality. Several studies suggest pessimism can sometimes be healthier. Mildly depressed women living longer, optimistic children dying earlier in middle age, and pessimistic older adults showing less vulnerability to depression after negative events. As positive thinking flourished in America, economic conditions deteriorated for most citizens. The working class faced declining wages, while the middle class lost pensions, health benefits, and job security. Simultaneously, wealth concentrated dramatically at the top, making America the most economically polarized first world society. While economic experts remained optimistic about housing prices, ordinary Americans adopted this outlook and accumulated debt. The ideology of positive thinking fueled this behavior. The Secret taught followers they could manifest material desires, while prosperity preachers claimed God wanted believers to have beautiful homes. Lenders were even more reckless as corporate culture abandoned rational management for intuition. At Lehman Brothers, Mike Gelband was fired in 2006 for warning CEO Richard Fuld they needed to rethink our business model. 2 years later, Lehman went bankrupt. Corporate leaders existed in bubbles of wealth and isolation. Between 1965 and 2000, the ratio of CEO pay to typical workers soared from 24 to 1 to 300 to 1. This lifestyle created bubble-itis, an environment where subordinates only deliver good news. Corporate chiefs who cynically promoted positive thinking eventually believed it themselves, resulting in approximately $3 trillion in evaporated savings. The alternative to positive thinking isn't despair, but realism, seeing things as they are, with both dangers and opportunities. Human survival has always depended on empiricism, from prehistoric humans testing arrowheads to our daily defensive pessimism when driving or seeking thorough medical diagnoses. Critical thinking, inherently skeptical, remains the cornerstone of higher education. Good students question assumptions, precisely what positive thinking gurus discourage. As surgeon Atul Gawande notes, the key is actually negative thinking, looking for and sometimes expecting failure. Vigilant realism doesn't prevent happiness, it enables it. How can we improve our situation without addressing actual circumstances? Positive thinking dismisses real problems as excuses, but mind doesn't automatically prevail over matter. In a culture selling happiness in pills and mindfulness and apps, we've forgotten that genuine joy comes from engaging with reality, not denying it. Only by acknowledging what's broken can we begin repairs. In that honest work lies something more valuable than manufactured positivity, authentic hope born from the courage to see clearly and act anyway.